Hi, so my name is Gala Yadgar. I'm a PhD student at the Technion, and this is joint work with my advisors, Michael Factor from IBM Haifa and Asaf Schuster from the Technion. And our work is titled Karma, Know-It-All Replacement for a Multi-Level Cache. So our world is, of course, the storage system where we have several levels of cache between the application at the top and the disks at the bottom. And we're talking about several problems that arise from such a scenario. The first is the problem of locality of reference. Caches are efficient because we expect to use, again, blocks that were recently used in the past. But this is not necessarily the case for cache 2 that you see here. If a block is accessed again, this reaccess will be served by cache number 1, and cache number 2 will not see such reaccesses. Now, the second problem is that of data replication. Even though these reaccesses are served by the first level, the blocks are still stored in the second level and prevent us from using up the space for more important blocks that are not stored in the first level. The third problem is that of lack of information. It's already been shown before that caches can be made more efficient if you match the replacement policy with the access pattern that you see. But the lower level caches don't even know the file that the block belongs to, let alone the application requesting it or the access pattern that this application is going to use. So this information cannot be used to make caches at the lower levels better. So we're looking for a way to solve all of these problems. These problems were addressed in previous studies, but we're trying to address all of them together in concert for one general solution. And we're looking for a policy that will be good for all or most access patterns and, most importantly, in all levels of the cache hierarchy. So today, storage controllers come with a significant cache that, along with the cache at the host form a cache hierarchy. We call this the one-to-one model because we have one cache in every level. And, of course, other models exist. There's the many-to-one model where several hosts will access the same storage controller. There's the one-to-many model where one host will access several storage systems. And there's the many-to-many model, that's the most general one, where many hosts will access many storage controllers over some network. And our work is focused today on the work that I present today is focused on the one-to-one model. The many-to-one model is part of our future work that we're working on currently. Okay, so into the problem of data replication. Imagine a loop of four blocks and two cache levels that are managed by LRU, and each cache level is of three blocks. So once we start bringing the blocks into the caches, we see reads for block numbers 1, 2, and 3. The caches will hold the same blocks. We will not be able to fit the fourth block into the cache, even though the caches are big enough. And for this reason, we will see very bad performance. This is the classic example. So the demote operation was introduced before to achieve exclusive caching, where a block is saved either at the controller or at the host cache, but not at both. And the way it works is that when a block is read, the controller knows that the block will be saved at the host cache, so it discards it. And once the host wants to evict a block, it demotes it, it sends it back to the controller, and tells it that the block is no longer cached at the host, and then it's the controller's job now to save the block. So in this example, once we wish to access block number 4, we will have to evict block number 1 from the host cache, and we will demote it, we'll send it down to the controller cache, and since this is the next block that we're going to access, it will be waiting for us at the controller, and the same will go for evicting block number 2 and sending it back to the controller. So eventually we've improved the hit rate of the controller significantly, but this is of course not a free lunch. We have to pay for the extra network transfers in order to get this improvement in hit rate. But we're okay for paying that because this is much better than bringing the blocks again from the disk. Okay, but now imagine for a minute that you already know that this is a loop. You want to match the best replacement policy for it, so you want to manage it by MRU. So every block you bring into the cache is the block that you're immediately going to evict and have to demote it to the controller. So what we would like to have is some way of not bringing the block into the cache at all, but telling the controller that it should save the block instead of the host. For that, we introduced the new read-save operation. It's an operation that will complement demote and prevent us from those read-demote pairs. In the beginning, let's take a look at the example. We'll read block number 1, 2, and 3 as before, but block number 4 will not be brought into the host cache at all. We'll use the read-save operation. We will tell the controller to save the block, even though it's being read. It will stay there, And then for the next accesses, we'll have a much higher hit rate, both in the controller cache and in the host cache. Okay, so back to the model with a more formal definition. We will have n levels of cache, with cache 1 at the host and cache n at the storage controller. And we can have several more caches in the network on the way. Each level will have the read, save, and demote operations that have the same cost while they're on the same level, but once we get closer to the disks, their cost increases significantly. Now, instead of trying to maximize the hit rate in one level or another, our goal is now to minimize the cost of all I/O operations that are performed on the host. We define the weighted I/O cost as the total cost of operations defined on a trace, and we wish to minimize this cost. Okay, so we know what our costs are, and now we want to know how much our buffer cache is worth. And for that, we use the notion of a marginal gain. Marginal gain for a cache is the increase in heat rate that you can achieve by adding one buffer to the cache. So if you take a look at that example of a loop managed by MRU, by adding one block, we increase the heat rate by 25%. So now imagine a block, a buffer cache that is divided into partitions, a little bit like the one the Argon talk from yesterday was about. And you have several partitions. You wish to manage every group of blocks in the partition of its own, and this group of blocks will have something in common that will define the replacement policy to use on those blocks. So now you have several partitions. You have one free buffer, and you have to decide which partition do you want to give this buffer to. Now you want to give it to the partition that will see the most benefit of it, and for that we use the marginal gain. That's our buffer currency. So what do we need to compute this marginal gain? First of all, we have to know the access pattern. And once we know the access pattern, we use the best replacement policy that we know for this access pattern. So this is something that is automatically decided. It's not something that we have to get from outside. And we have to know the current size of the cache and of each partition in order to compute the marginal gain to make our further decisions. Now, notice that the key here is the access pattern. This is something that we want to get from the application. These are our hints. This is our know-it-all replacement. And we choose the databases as an example for applications that can easily provide us with such information. The query optimizer will construct a query execution plan for each query that it starts to execute. And this query plan determines the access pattern to every database table or index level or index tree. So once we have this information is exposed by the database to the user, we can use it to get the access pattern and make our decisions. So going back to the problems and how we tend to solve them, we will use LRU only when we know that there is locality of reference. This is how we're going to solve the locality of reference problem. We will avoid data replication by using the demote and read-save operations to achieve exclusive caching. And we will solve the problem of lack of information by passing some information to the lower levels. Are we dealing with that? Keep going. No, I don't think it's me. So I'm just going to ignore that and keep going. We'll solve the problem of lack of information by passing some information to the lower levels, but it will be only the minimal information that we need in order to use marginal gains for our computations. Okay, so our algorithm is named Karma, and this is how it's going to work. We get from the database a division of blocks into ranges. Each range can be either a database table or an index tree level. Now, I'm going to talk in terms of databases, but the algorithm is meant to work with any application that could provide such information. It's just easier to explain when I talk about databases here. Okay, so we get a division of the blocks into ranges, and every block request from the application will be tagged by the range ID of this block. So the lower levels know which range this block belongs to and can make the appropriate decisions. We will use the query plan for the access pattern of every table or index tree. And by using the access plan, we will and knowing which replacement policy is the best for it, we will compute the marginal gain for each range. We will also use the frequency of access to every table or index, which is available from the query plan, in order to compute the normalized marginal gain. We will add a weight for every marginal gain for a range, which depends on the frequency of access to this range, so that we can compare the marginal gain and make an informed decision. So now our next step is obvious. We order our ranges, not the blocks, the ranges, in order of their marginal gain, and we keep in the higher levels of the cache the ranges that have the higher marginal gain. These are the ranges that should get the most cache space. Let's take a look at an example. We have a loop join query performed on two tables. The blue one is read sequentially, so we're moving on to the next block each time. And the green one is read using an index tree. So every time we access one tuple in the blue table over there, we will search the index tree and we'll get the corresponding tuple from the green table. The resulting access pattern will look like this. We'll have one blue access and then one access to each of the index tree levels and a green access. And these are the hints that we expect to get in order to make our decisions. We will get a chart of hints. We will get each color represents a range, so we will have an entry for each range. We will have the access pattern to each of the ranges, so S is for sequential, L is for loop, and R is for random. We will have the size of the table or the index tree, and we'll have the frequency of access to this range. So how the cache is going to look like? Well, the sequential ranges are allocated all one block. There's only one such range in this example. Because once we move on to the tuples in the next block, we're never going to go back to the previous block. So one block is enough here. Then we save the next level, the highest level of the levels of the index tree. These are the tables, the blocks that have the best probability of being accessed. And the rest of the space is allocated for the random range. Notice that this partition is split between two levels. So we're going to manage it using one LRU stack using the demote operation that we saw before. Okay, so now we want to convince you that this actually works. We run some simulations. We use the PostgreSQL open source database for generating our traces, and we use the hints from the query plan for every such query. We take our queries from the TPCH decision support benchmark. These queries have long execution times. They access large amounts of data, usually entire tables. And we also have some results for synthetic ZIF traces, which are typical for file system accesses. Now, our simulations here are for two levels of cache, so n equals 2. And we compare ourselves to three types of existing applications. Existing policies. The first type is LRU and its extension to multiple levels with demote. The second type includes 2Q, multi-queue, and ARC. These are all policies that account for frequency of access as well as recency. So they distinguish between blocks that were accessed once or only a few times and blocks that were accessed many times in the past. They all keep a ghost cache, which is metadata and frequency information for blocks that were recently evicted from the cache. And the third type of policy is the informed policies. We have one representative there, LRUSP. It uses application hints, but only in the file system where they are currently available. And in this study, the applications had to be altered in order to supply the cache with instructions of how to what replacement policy to use for the blocks. Okay, so most of the policies that I mentioned were originally constructed for one level of cache, whereas we want to compare karma to them on multiple levels of cache. So we examined three different settings for the simulation. The first setting is the basic one, where the algorithm in question is used in one level and LRU is used in the other. The second setting is the double, where we use the same algorithm on both cache levels. And the third setting is the global setting, where we have to explicitly change the algorithm to use demote in order to manage the caches globally. So this is the first time we define it. We define all policies. We implemented global multi-queue. We will see the results in a minute. Okay, so let's see how we read this graph before we go into the results. These are results for query number 3 of the TPCH benchmark. The results for the other queries look more or less the same. The numbers are a little bit different, but the trends are similar. The y-axis shows the I/O cost compared to that of LRU. So if it's 100, it means that the performance is just like that of LRU, and if it's less, it's better. the x-axis that I'm not sure everybody in the back can see shows the aggregate cache size in terms of compared to the size of the data set. So if it's 1, it means that the entire data set can fit in the aggregate cache. And if it's 2, it means that the entire data set can fit in either level of the cache. Okay, so we start with the non-informed policies, the frequency-based ones. And their basic settings actually perform just like LRU. We can't even see the line here. Since we ran query 3 several times, we requested different parameters every time. So we have a looping access here, and these policies are unable to detect the loop because they're looking for different frequencies of the blocks. This does not exist in such a trace. Their double settings actually shows some anomaly. This used to be green. Notice that since they all have a very big ghost cache, when the cache is big enough to hold the entire data set in one level, these algorithms are unable to fit the entire data set into the cache. So when the cache is very big, their performance is actually worse than LRU. They're wasting their space and not getting anything from it. In the global policies, we see some more promising results. Notice that demote, that's the purple line here. When the cache is big enough, it shows a very good improvement compared to that of LRU. Because if you recall the example that I showed you before, this is primarily looping accesses. The entire loops can fit into the cache, so we get a very good improvement compared to that of LRU. But the thing is that whenever the cache is smaller than just the size of the data set, we get performance which is a bit worse than that of LRU. We have to pay the overhead of these demotes every time we evict a block, but the blocks are never saved in the lower level enough to be actually used. So we pay the overhead, we don't get anything, and our performance is worse than that of LRU. For global multi-queue, it's a little bit worse because of the ghost cache. So global multi-queue doesn't even show the improvement that demote shows when the cache is big enough. A different behavior is exhibited by the informed policy, basic LRUSP. It uses, I remind you, application hints in the first level. So it knows about the loops, and it uses MRU to manage them. And every time we increase the cache size, we get a little bit more improvement in performance. Now, another thing that basic LRUSP enjoys is some degree of exclusive caching because a different policy is used in each level. We have MRU in the top level and LRU at the bottom level. So here we get an improvement in all cache sizes. Karma, that's the pink line, shows the best performance because it enjoys all the benefits of all these other policies. It enjoys the exclusive caching, so we get a very good performance when the cache is big enough. It also knows about the loop, so it uses MRU in both levels to manage the loop. So we get improvement every time we increase the cache size. We don't need the ghost cache to manage to keep past information because all the information is given to us by the application, and so we're able to avoid both the overhead of the ghost cache and both the overhead of redundant demotes because we use read save once we know that the blocks are going to be evicted. Okay, so like I said, the rest of the queries look pretty much the same, and a different type of trace uses all the queries in the benchmark in different permutations. These permutations, these query sets, are defined by the TPCH benchmark. Once we run different queries one after another, every time we start seeing block accesses from a different query, we get a new set of hints. What Karma does is it keeps in the cache only those blocks that are valuable according to the new set of hints, and the blocks that are not valuable anymore can be immediately discarded. We don't have to wait until we realize that these blocks are not valuable for us anymore. So there are two things to notice in this graph. We have different columns here for every policy. The red columns show a cache size of half the size of the data set, and the blue columns show a cache size of the entire data set. Now notice that the performance improves for many of the policies once the cache is big enough, but only the global policies, some of the global policies and the informed policies, Karma is both, are able to improve also on the smaller cache level, in the smaller cache sizes. By using the hints, by changing our cache content quickly enough, we're able to improve also when the cache is not big enough to hold the entire data set, and this is obviously the cache sizes that matter. Another thing to notice is the fact that these results here are averaged over 20 query sets, so 20 permutations of the queries in the benchmark. We see here the standard deviation, which is very high for the policies which are based on frequency. The reason is that these policies keep their blocks long enough until they realize that their frequency is not high enough anymore in order to be kept in the cache, and these blocks are discarded. The standard deviation means that for every time we change the permutation or the order of the queries, we get different results. So these policies depend on the order that the queries are run in the query set. The standard deviation for karma is very small. It shows that no matter what order the queries are run, once we get the hints, we know what's going to happen next, we can make the decisions early enough and not waste our cache space on blocks that are not valuable for us anymore. Okay, so to sum it up, we already knew that demote is good for exclusive caching, and we already knew that hints are good for choosing the best replacement policy for the blocks. What we have now is a policy that uses hints for handling different access patterns, but it does that on all cache levels and not only on the file system. It uses marginal gains in order to identify the ranges with the most valuable blocks. It uses demote for exclusive caching, but it also uses the new read-save operation to avoid demotes that are not necessary. And by these 4 points, we get improvement over all existing policies. Some of our future work is to expand our storage model. So we're aiming at concurrent queries, several queries run at the same time on the same host. And we also would like to see multiple hosts that would be different caches accessing the same second-level cache. We would like to add several more operations that would be prefetching and writes, and we would like to work with more hint types and not necessarily the access pattern that are well-defined. Okay, any questions?
Wang Wang from Ample. It's possible that if you have concurrent queries, the same block can belong to several different access patterns. So how do you plan to handle that case?
Okay. Once we have several concurrent queries, several things can happen. The first is that the same range will be accessed in several different access patterns. But even if it is accessed in the same access pattern by different processes, we can get different behavior. Think of a loop where two queries use a loop on the same table, but these loops are offset. So simply using MRU for this loop will not be the best policy because we can have a situation where one query evicts the blocks that the next query is going to use immediately. So we will have to take a look at combinations of access patterns to choose the best replacement policy for combinations of access patterns and not just for a single access pattern. Any more questions?
I had a question about this. My question had to do with even with sequential access patterns, you can imagine the access patterns changing so rapidly that the temporal difference in the change of access patterns is substantially shorter than the amount of time it takes your caching policies to have effect. And so I was wondering if you've thought about what would happen in an environment where you knew the access patterns, but you only know them a little bit ahead of time instead of substantially far enough ahead of time.
Well, we don't need to know them very long before the query actually starts because we're not prefetching yet. We're not bringing blocks into the cache before they are used. Our decision is which blocks to save once they arrive at the cache. So even if we get the hints just as the query starts, it's good enough for us. Can't hear you.
HP Labs. When we were working on Demote, what we found where we spend most of our time was coping with the multi-host case. I was wondering if you have speculated about how your algorithms might change. Ours made dramatic alterations when you introduced the multi-host situation.
Okay, I remember that from the paper. And this is actually what we're working on next. And we're trying a different approach than the one that you used.
Good.
We're going.
Variety is a wonderful thing.
Just a reminder for the problem with multiple hosts mainly is that once you read a block and you know that it is saved in one of the hosts, it can still be requested by a different host. So it's not necessarily good to throw it away immediately. And what we will try to do is try to look at the shared partitions. Well, we will use the partitions in the lower cache as well, but now we will have to manage partitions from different competing hosts. So we will have to look differently at partitions that are shared between several hosts and manage them, again, by choosing the best replacement policy. So it will not necessarily be LRU in a split partition between levels, or not necessarily MRU. It will have to be a different replacement policy that takes into account the fact that the blocks are not necessarily discarded once one host requests them. So we'll need to
I look forward to those results.
Thank you.